Juan Doe, Area Vice President of Federal Sales here at Calibra, filling in for Jay. Today's guest speaker is Captain Erickson, the Chief Data and Artificial Intelligence Officer, United States Coast Guard. And when I heard that the U.S. Coast Guard had built the very first data office and that the data download was going to be interviewing the guy behind it all, I knew I had to be there. As a veteran, I care about how the federal government is intersecting with data, another area that I'm passionate about. I'm excited about what the captain is doing, given the Coast Guard's very unique mission requirements and how they're really one of the first movers in the federal government to embrace data as a strategic asset. I think you're really going to love this, but enough from me. Let's get started. Captain Erickson, for those that don't know what the Coast Guard does, can you explain what the Coast Guard mission is?
The Coast Guard is a very multi-mission service. You know, we're one of the six armed forces of the United States. We're the only armed force outside of the Department of Defense, and we work for the Department of Homeland Security. I think that a lot of Americans understand some of our very common missions about search and rescue, maritime law enforcement, fisheries protection, but they may or may not know that we also perform a lot of maritime inspection, maritime environmental response and pollution control. We perform icebreaking activities. We service all of the aids to navigation within the United States, Guam, clear out to Puerto Rico as well. So there's a significant amount of broad range of both authorities and mission sets that the Coast Guard does. We're also a member of the intelligence community. So we have our own intelligence element, and we're at all times a law enforcement agency, a regulator, and as I said before, a member of the armed force.
Well, you know, that's a really important mission. How did you get into this role at the Coast Guard?
I'm actually a career aviator, so most of my career was spent flying H-65 Dolphins, doing search and rescue, national defense, and law enforcement missions. And as you grow more senior in this organization and other military organizations, you start to branch out beyond what would be your core community. And I branched out a little bit into budget and program review. I was also inside of aviation. I was an aeronautical engineer. But towards the end, I went to MIT Sloan for a program called the MIT Sloan Fellows program for 1 year. And when I came out of that, we had just commissioned this team called the Data Readiness Task Force. And they were looking for someone who could lead it that had a broad understanding of the organization operations, as well as how we do business in our headquarters unit. And I fit that criteria. And a few months after I got in the role, I was able to become the Coast Guard's first Chief Data Officer. And then the title I hold now is the Chief Data and Artificial Intelligence Officer. So kind of a crazy pathway. And as I talk with other chief data officers in industry and government, many of my peers and colleagues have, you know, crazy and strange backgrounds as well. We don't all just necessarily come from technology, even though I would say, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was not a lot of chief data officers out there. And often the role of data and analytics within the organization fell to the IT leaders, often under the CIO. And so only within the last 10 or 15 years has the chief data officer emerged as a very important role within the organization, especially as a senior business leader.
You know, being a veteran myself, I can appreciate having somebody elevated to this role that you're in right now that has operational knowledge, right? You've been on the front lines. You've led the men and women of the Coast Guard through various different missions, either flying fixed wing, flying rotary, all sorts of those different missions. And you understand kind of the interactions that the Coast Guard has with all of your adjacent, brothers and sisters in the DOD, you know, DHS, the intelligence community. When you came on in this role, there's got to be so many things that you have to do. You're the first person in, you're the innovator. What do you do first, and how did you decide on that?
I would say I listened a lot. You know, that's the first thing that I did, you know. As we started to come up to speed and get an idea of where the pain points were within the organization, they were across everything you would expect: technology, process, people, education within the data professional workforce, and even outside the data professional workforce, to understand how we are going to attack data analytics and artificial intelligence within our organization. And like you had said, I think a strong point of mine was a heavy operational background. So I have an idea as a frontline operator what I need to do my job better. And so that has been something that I've tried to instill within my team, that every decision that we make, it's often hard when you're back here at headquarters and you're here for couple months, couple years, and you haven't been out conducting field operations, you start to forget sometimes what was important to you when you were out there. And so I always try to remind my team, every time we make a decision here, is this a decision that is going to support frontline operations? Is this a decision that's going to support that frontline coxswain in a small boat, the mission commander that is trying to conduct a high seas fisheries mission, the aviator that's conducting a search and rescue operation, you know, far offshore late at night? And what is really cool about my team of active duty personnel are comprised of a number of operators. We have pilots. My deputy is a cutterman. So, he was conducting counter-narcotics operations, migrant operations, some of our, I would say, most high-profile activities that we do. He was there conducting them. And the same goes for my governance lead. And the officers, some of them had some strong backgrounds in data science, but most of them had backgrounds in operations.
And it's such an intersection between the operator and the science of it, right? And it's so important to understand, to what you said, frontline users of this information. How do you make their life easier, safer, faster, cheaper? So when you came on board, probably had a couple of challenges. One was just up-leveling the workforce, right? But the other one was kind of identifying first use cases. So can you maybe describe what your first use cases were and how the office has evolved over the last couple of years in terms of what you're doing now with versus what you started doing?
One of the things we came up with first was a strategy. And within that strategy, one of our key principles was to leverage the full potential of data as a strategic asset. Well, what does that mean? And how are you going to attack that? Because this is just... I would offer that one of the reasons we didn't have people working this problem set until now is because it's a very hard problem set. How are we going to take apart data in a 233-year-old organization that has really failed to properly resource expertise and team training, getting the talent on board to properly manage, govern, exploit, and use the data that we have? We are pretty good at collecting data, and I would say we aren't as good as gathering insights from that data. So one of the first things that we had to understand is we should take an approach that isn't attacking everything at once, but rather attacks the most important elements, whether it's data elements or questions we want answered first. And so we did start to head down this journey saying, we are going to identify the key use cases within the organization, and we are then going to evaluate the data needs of those use cases, and we will attack the data issues from that perspective. Rather than going after everything at once, we're going to focus on our highest priority objectives. And so at the time when we had first started, we were still heavily in COVID. We had contracted a company that we worked very close with originally to determine the locations to send vaccinations to the most critical areas within our organization, basically our clinic infrastructure, so that we would vaccinate our personnel properly. And one clinic, on the West Coast didn't hold all the vaccines, and our personnel in other locations weren't getting the vaccinations that we needed. Later, it became a data analytic on who in the workforce was vaccinated as we were making these attempts to vaccinate. Along the way, we identified a few other use cases One was in readiness of personnel and assets. One was in domestic fisheries and trying to figure out if we could put our limited assets into locations where they would maximize their law enforcement abilities, you know, rather than just kind of loosely patrolling an area. Let's figure out where some of the violations occurred historically. Let's figure out, due to outside information, where the fisheries fleets might be moving, and let's see if we can optimize our patrol assets into some locations. So that was one of the use cases. And then another use case was about scheduling of reservists so that we could maximize their potential and activity during contingency operations, for which we had a number of hurricanes that had hit in the years leading up to this. We had COVID activity occurring and there was need to activate reservists. And we were finding that our activation methods were obsolete and we wanted to renew those. So those were some examples of where we took a look. And I would say that some of those were high priority, but some of those were just about rolling our sleeves up, getting our hands dirty and trying to figure out how are we going to use big data or at least analytics at scale to better this organization. So that was early. Now we actually have taken the same approach. We are continuing to look at use case by use case, identify the highest priority use cases for the organization. We'll talk to sponsor and say, okay, what are the questions that you're trying to answer? Okay, what data assets do you need? Which ones do we have? Is the quality acceptable enough? And which ones do we need? And that's kind of how we approach use cases, analytics use cases today. I can give you an example. When our new commandant came in about a year and a half ago in 2022, one of her banner statements are, tomorrow looks different and so will we. And she laid out a few priorities on what we're going to do during her four-year tenure. And one of them was transform our total workforce, sharpen our competitive edge, and advance our mission excellence. So in the transform our total workforce line of effort, one of the things that she absolutely wanted to get after was overhaul our talent management. And so we commissioned a talent management transformation task force. And use cases around talent management are some of our highest priority use cases. While this was happening, we continued to recognize that our enlisted workforce recruiting was not keeping pace with the service. And so, like the other military services, we've all found ourselves in a situation where we're significantly short. The recruiting flow isn't as easy as it may have been in the past. And we're on a very, very heavy recruiting effort right now. So, hey, Tuan, please tell your friends who have sons and daughters that are looking for a super exciting opportunity where you can come into the Coast Guard, serve on a Coast Guard cutter in the Florida Straits, conduct migrant operations, narcotics operations, go to flight school, fly helicopters, fly C-130s, go to MIT and then come out as the chief data and artificial intelligence officer. This is one of the only organizations where you're going to find that possibility. I want your sons and daughters to come have an exciting career like I have over the last 32-ish years.
That's amazing. I think the overall theme was how the Coast Guard's using data and your office is enabling the Coast Guard to execute their mission with more efficiency, faster, and cheaper, right? It's quite stunning. Going back to your previous comment about the Coast Guard being integrated with both some of our adjacent countries that we neighbor, the Coast Guard's part of the DOD, part of DHS, part of the intelligence community. Obviously, all of those various agencies have different governance around their data. They have different rules about it. How do you reconcile all those data governance rules from different agencies, partner agencies?
There is a massive effort across the U.S. government to become more joint, and data plays a big part in that. Data sharing, data interoperability, and the Coast Guard is, I believe, in kind of a unique situation. When I sit with my, so we work for the Department of Homeland Security. And when I sit with my DHS peers from the other components, I am the one who, you know, has my other foot in the DOD pot. So I sit with my DHS peers and I really feel like a link to the DOD efforts that are happening right now around data analytics and artificial intelligence. And so when we were setting up our shop and setting up how we were going to support the U.S. Coast Guard, we were also thinking about our joint partners. We set up our shop to make sure that we would align with DHS rules and policies. I am a member of the Chief Data Officer Directorate with DHS, as well as the Artificial Intelligence Subcommittee. So we were able to align my office so that we will work very well with the DHS structure. But at the same time, we have an obligation to support the warfighter. And so we also built our shop with an eye towards DOD, which in my opinion is moving out very, very well in a number of areas of artificial intelligence analytics with the stand-up of the Chief Digital and Artificial Intelligence Officer run by Dr. Martell. And so my team is closely tied in with that team in areas of algorithmic warfare, the policy shop, and then what was the business analytics domain, and really is kind of all under Joe Larson's team now in algorithmic warfare. But we sync with CDAO on the DOD side. We sync with CDOD on the DHS side. And as for setting up our organization to be interoperable with both, it really does come down to the mission slice. You know, I think that if you were to take a look at financial transactions and ensuring that financial data assets were going to properly flow, we're heavily, you know, and very close to DHS on that side. But if you're looking at ISR on the high seas, target acquisition, I would say stuff like, you know, computer vision activity, we're very, very closely linked with some of our DOD teams in the Department of Navy, in DOD, and as well the Department of Air Force.
It reminds me of this old Native American proverb. It's one of my favorite. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right? And the way you've built this, it is designed to be interoperable. Like, that's a key word with all the adjacent agencies, right, that play.
It sure is. And you know, Tuan, There was a lot of work just trying to, and the work is not done, trying to make ourselves interoperable, inside the Coast Guard, right?
Yeah,
we have business
Who
verticals.
Are you? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that too, but also bringing business verticals together through integrated data environments or community data standards, or we are deploying data mesh. So a very domain-oriented data management architecture that brings in the social side of data as well as the technology side of data, trying to figure out how this is going to work within very different domains within any organization, that is challenging as well. So a lot of our work is internally focused, but at all times we are thinking about how we are going to interoperate with our joint partners.
So you have the challenge of actually, you know, moving data around and looking at data and taking in data and following the governance and the rules around it, but also the cultural shift within the Coast Guard, which you just talked about. Like, hey, you know, data is a strategic asset. Like, the way we do business tomorrow is not how we did business yesterday. And the faster we can incorporate data as a strategic asset into our planning, the better off we all will be, right? And that's important.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the better off the mission is going to be, right? So the way I explain data as a strategic asset is to people within my organization, I try to walk them down a journey of the helicopter. This is something that I understand very well. If you go back 100 years in our service, we have just started to, you know, perform helicopter rescue. So we don't know how to do helicopter rescue at scale. We can do it if everything's right, the environment's right, and we can go out and we can try it. We fail at it. We killed people trying it. And along the way, along this journey, we learned a lot of things. We learned how many people it takes to take care of helicopters at the point of departure. We learned how many people it takes to take care of helicopters at the depot level, where you fly them in every 4 years and take them completely apart. We learned how many weeks it takes to train a pilot, train a rescue swimmer, train a flight mechanic. All of these people have specialized tasks. When you are going to build a helicopter rescue organization, deploy it at scale across a very dangerous environment, expect it to happen at night in Alaska, where nobody else is looking, to follow policies that are written in a headquarters from Washington, D.C., without even asking any questions, and do this day in and day out with success and safety. Now let's plant that to data analytics and artificial intelligence. This organization, we don't understand what data stewards do. We're learning that now. We didn't really understand where a data scientist would be most effective. We're learning that now. We didn't know what type of equipment we should use for conducting big data analytics, conducting artificial intelligence. Generative AI just came out. That's like a whole new type of helicopter rescue we got to figure out. If you didn't have a chief data and artificial intelligence officer and a team of people who are looking at the organization through a data and AI lens every day, you would not be making movements forward to figure out, how am I going to do this at scale and speed across the organization? That's how I try to explain what a strategic asset really looks like.
Absolutely. I was actually meeting with the VA because I keep getting this email as a veteran about this genome project that's going on. And I finally was talking to the data person over there, and what he said was, look, for veterans, the VA is the largest provider of healthcare, right? What they said was, what's unique about the information that we have from a strategic perspective is we know where our veterans were deployed. We know what toxic exposures they've had. We know what kind of jobs they had, right? And then when they leave there, not only was their healthcare provided by the DOD when they were in the military, but then when they get out, it's provided potentially by the VA. They can track kind of common disease states. And now they have this whole genome project to see kind of, is there a way to get to bend the cost curve and to improve the quality of care for our veterans, right? It's a super important mission.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like what you were talking about, like, federal agencies are using data strategically. They're starting to do it, and you're starting to see the real impact of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, so let me ask you a question. So 30, how many years? 30, 32 years?
Coming up on, 32 years.
Every leader, when they depart their job, not that I'm suggesting that you should depart your job anytime soon, but eventually you will. We all do. And you are going to write that memo for the next CDO, your replacement. What does that memo say?
That's a good question. I haven't written it yet, but I am.
Any announcements here? Any breaking news?
Yeah. It might be breaking news for someone listening, but next year is going to be a retirement for me, probably in May. I'm super excited about the journey I've had thus far, but really, aviation has been my passion. I'm an aviator in my private time as a civilian aviator. I'm an aviator in the military. Aviation has been my passion, but all of a sudden I got dropped into this role, and now artificial intelligence, analytics, and data has become a new passion for me. I want to pursue that and even maybe give back and continue to serve in the public sector. But that is what I'm looking to go do. I'm super excited about the transition. But so I haven't written this out. I need to write it out. So thank you for prompting me on reminding me. I'm going to write it down on my list here.
Sorry to give you something else to do.
But off the top of my head, I think some of the foundational points that I learned along the way, I would be very careful about what I wrote to this next person, because I could fill this page up and just keep, I could write a book to this person of all the things that I would share with them. But I would say stuff like, you're going to boil the ocean and not get anywhere unless you take a, kind of a use case perspective. Like, let's just figure out what the highest priority things we want to do, and we'll try to get to everything else, but you're never going to get to all the data, you know. So really try to focus your efforts when you're coming into this role. Data is not IT. I think that there is no chief data officer out there that, you know, that we've groomed for years. You know, we have very, very highly capable officers conducting frontline missions. They are, you know, sector commanders. There are IT professionals out there, but I think you walk into this role thinking that data is all about technology, you're going to have a big awakening. Data is a core business asset. There is a big people and culture element about it, and technology is absolutely going to enable all of the activities that we want to conduct around data analytics and AI, but you will want to prioritize talent over tech every single time. And so I would say that one of the priorities of the next chief data and artificial intelligence officer is making this organization a data literate and data talented organization. That's going to be something that will be very important and change the course of this organization forever. So I think that those are some of the things that I would write. I need to think about it some more.
What's interesting about this domain is if you think about just kind of kids deciding whether they go to college or whether they do a vocation, right? And like, you know, student debt is top of mind for young adults now. And my advice to them is, hey, look, if you really want a good paying job that's secure, that's future proof, you know, going into data would be it, right? And you're seeing like industries saying, hey, you know what, a traditional four-year college degree is not necessary anymore, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any kids, but if I had kids and they said, hey, you know, Dad, should I take French or Spanish? I'd be like, take Python, you know, yes. Like that, right. That's going to, you know, and I mean, I realize that with generative AI and large language models that maybe English is the new coding language, but I do not think early Python knowledge is going to hurt anybody today.
The other thing that's really cool about the data space is the demographics of the workers are changing, right? And you have played a major role in women leaders in data and analytics, and you've been recognized for your efforts in leading and promoting diversity in the workforce. What advice, Kat Merrickson, do you have for industry to improve diversity and inclusion in kind of maybe underrepresented minorities in this field?
You know, one of the very, very strong, as an aviator, for much of my aviation career, the women in aviation has been a really positive and valuable community that I've gotten value from, and many of my peer aviators have gotten value from, and it was very, very strong. And so when I made this shift over to what I would call the data professional community, it wasn't as strong, but there was this one group, Women in Data, I don't know if you know Sadie St. Lawrence, who has this amazing platform and an amazing message to continue to promote and help both women and minorities in data and technology, you know, initiatives. And I just thought it was amazing. And as I looked around my office, you can see that, hey, we don't have as strong of a representation in our data office as we should. You know, it doesn't represent the rest of America. And as public servants, in everything that we do, whether it's frontline operations or it's, you know, data, artificial intelligence, and analytics, I feel like we should, you know, have a demographic that represents the public for which we serve. And so I've promoted opportunities for my team and others to seek out opportunities like Women in Data and communities of interest like that that promote diversity in the field of technology.
Yeah, you know, I keep saying to my peers in industry, nobody's born with 5 years of data experience. You got to give people shots, right? You got to like build an environment where people can learn and make mistakes and build and increase their skills. I want to move on to the fun round. Not that this hasn't been fun, but the real fun round.
Oh boy.
At the end of every podcast that I do with my interviewees, I have a fun round. It's rapid fire. So you can't think of, it's, you know, short answers, rapid fire. It's designed to be fun.
Okay.
Okay. And there's only like, 11 questions. So
okay.
You're from Washington State, right?
Yes.
Are you a Seahawks or a Mariners fan?
Seahawks. Although Randy Johnson, the big unit, was one of my favorite sports players ever.
That's right.
Yes. When he hit the bird. I mean, God bless his little soul, but Randy Johnson hit a bird with a 99 mile per hour fastball. The bird had no chance.
Oh gosh, I remember that. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Okay. Is a hot dog a sandwich or a taco?
The sandwich.
Is an Osprey an airplane or a helicopter?
Let's just, because of my primary community, we'll go with helicopter.
If you could gain a superpower, what would it be?
Transport to new locations.
Oh, really?
Immediately.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Got it.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, fad or real?
Real.
That answer is normally mixed.
Yeah, well, listen, it's statistical math at scale. It's real.
Right.
I'm sorry, it's science.
What advice do you have for a young person contemplating joining the Coast Guard?
It is what you make of it. I have been extremely disappointed when I have gotten an assignment. This is not where I want to go. I don't want to go to this place in the country. I don't want to do this type of work. And I must be the stupidest person on forecasting what is going to be a good time, because I get to this new place, I meet the best of friends, both professionally and in the community. I find the greatest things to do, and then I'm sad to leave. And so it's what you make of it. Join this organization. It is a great organization. There's so many opportunities. It's just do it. And it is what you make of it.
That's a great answer. Last question for you. What advice do you have for a young person contemplating a career in data science?
Do what you love. Okay. Do what you are passionate about. If data science is something that, looks like it's going to be lucrative in the future, and that is your only reason that you're doing it, do not do it. Don't do it.
Right.
Often I have sat with young officers, young aviators who are wondering whether they should apply to become an aeronautical engineer like I was. And my advice has been throughout my career, I don't want you in my aeronautical engineering community if you don't want to be here. You are going to work longer hours. You are going to have tougher problems. You are going to not get a chance to fly as much as your peers that might have jobs that are less demanding. But you are going to be, rewarded with hard work. And when your personnel and your men and women accomplish their goals and you are a part of that, these will be lifelong leadership lasting rewards that you will never, ever be able to replace. But do not do something you are not passionate about because it looks like a good thing to do. So that is my advice. Data science, if you're passionate about it, do it. If you're not, do whatever else you want to do. Jump out of helicopters, fly helicopters, be a jet pilot. Go pursue your passion.
Yeah. If you're having fun, it's not a job.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. If there's one thing we can learn from Captain Erickson, it's to start small and don't try to eat the entire elephant. The captain's insights on the importance of starting small and building from there when embarking on a data journey, well, they really underscore the importance of order and efficiency. I mean, it's so easy to lose sight of the forest or the trees when working with that much data, let alone with all the data sprawled across the many departments and partners of a government organization. But Captain Erickson is a pilot, and a pilot's approach tends to lend itself to building strategy and using tactics to accomplish that strategy. These complex changes don't happen overnight, so incremental growth is necessary, and a pipeline of easy wins builds confidence with your stakeholders. It's truly an honor to connect with the captain in a space like this. He is so passionate and truly recognizes the importance of the job he's doing. In all branches of the military, any decision you make, even decisions made in a data office, are bound to impact both the lives of service members and citizens alike. That's a lot of weight to put on a data strategy. But If you think about it, doesn't data have the power to propel all organizations into the future? I think so, because at the end of the day, we're all striving for the next level of efficiency. And that's what data is all about. For Calibra, this is the Data Download. I'm your host, Tuan Do, and we'll see you next time.
Want even more insight into managing your data? Visit calibra.com/podcast for additional resources on the topics covered in our show. Be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a new episode. And a 5-star review certainly doesn't hurt our chances with the algorithm. It's all about the algorithm, isn't it, folks? It's a great way to help us reach new listeners, and we truly do appreciate your support. The Data Download is a production of Calibra in collaboration with Stories Bureau.